We need to do user testing.
Okay, let's do it.
A few moments later.
We did it.
Now what? Does this sound familiar? This talk is going to be about user testing to real actions. UX accessibility with our guest speaker, Kyle Heaton. Enjoy listening to this podcast.
I've got this actually. Thank you, mate. Cheers. There we go. All right. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Give me a whoop whoop. Nice. All right, good. So I'm here to talk to you a little bit about these two things today, which is going to be user testing and accessibility. So how many designers do we have again? How many designers? Fantastic. Excellent, excellent. Someone at the back just decided, oh, yeah, all right, I'll do a design. You've used MS Paint, Chimikab. Got it. All right. It's all design. It's all design, my friend. All right, I want to start off, before we go any further, I want to tell you a little story. And actually, I'm not sure if there was a gentleman in the room. I don't know if you were there for this meeting, but there was a project called Restaurants of Bangkok. And it's many, 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 many years ago. And there was a room filled with, unfortunately, all men. And we were making decisions for something that would affect everybody. It's about choosing a restaurant. And the idea was is that you search for something and you would look on the listing to find out where to go. Easy, right? Now, the thing is, I was a dude. Well, I still am, I think. Last time I checked. I'm a dude. The project owner was a dude. The entrepreneur was a dude. And there was a thing. I think there was another designer in the room as well. All men. And we were making a decision about how both men and women choose a restaurant. Do you think we got it right? Yes or no?
No.
No. Fantastic answer. Right. Now, let me tell you why. So, let the guys shout out how you choose a restaurant. What do you look for? Like reviews. What else?
Price.
Cheap.
Quantity.
Quantity. I need buffets. Fantastic. What else?
Location.
Good. Good, good, good. Right. Now, look around you to the man next to you. What's he wearing? Jeans, t-shirt, okay, nice dress shirt there. Okay, pink thong, which is sticking out of Matthias's back there. Whatever it might be, whatever it floats you, but we're generally sort of, you know, pants and shirt kind of thing, right? Now look at the girls, they're quite different, right? They're gonna be a little bit more different. So think about this. We were looking at this list here, right? And I was like, this is not right. We need to speak to more women about this design. And so I said to one of the secretaries, I said, could you come over here? And I said, can you tell me how would you choose a restaurant? And she said, price. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Reviews, good, okay. And then she was like, I want to know what it's like. I'm like, oh, you mean reviews? She goes, no. I want to know what kind of place it is. You mean, oh, type of food? No. What she was trying to say was that she wanted to know what type of place it is, so she knew what to wear. Right? Absolutely floored me, right? And I thought I was a kind of a UX designer, and I was like doing all the stuff, you know, card sorting and focus groups and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't realize there's a lot around user testing that you can't ask. You don't know that to ask that question. I never, ever thought about asking about what to wear. Because if it's a labour or if it's Kwit Diao Gai on the road, right, I'm going to wear the same thing, pretty much. With or without underwear, that depends on how special I'm feeling. But nevertheless, I need to find out what to wear. You know, the girls will be thinking about something. It's like, hold on, like, I'm at work and you're going to take me to labour. Just a minute, I'll be back in a minute, right? Back, change, okay, now I feel comfortable. So all we did in that listing was put a little icon to say what type of dress code or what type of feel. Is it romantic? Is it fun? Is it formal? What is it? That is user testing with action. And that's what I want to talk about today. Because imagine this. I don't know if you've been in any big projects. I have. And when you do kind of what it's saying here is if you think good design is expensive, you know, you're like, 4,000 baht an hour for that designer. Whoa. Yeah, but what happens if he does it wrong? That's going to cost you a hell of a lot more money. And a few people found that. Has anyone been to Domino's Pizza? Yeah? Do you know the story? Yeah, they got sued, didn't they? Back in the days of pre-COVID, when life was different. Right? When you cared about these kind of things. And there was a blind person who sued the company because he couldn't order a pizza. So it's a real thing. It's legislation. So what I want to do now is I want to start talking about the real stuff. What does user testing look like? And I guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, it does not look like a Medium post. And it just definitely not going to find it on Stack Overflow. Right? Hey, I tell you what, right? Tell you for something for funny. You know, like, this is the apocalypse with COVID. If Stack Overflow went down, just watch all the developers panic. Now that will kill them. Is this user testing, yes or no? Post it's on a wall.
No.
No. Could be. Maybe. Could be. All right. Is this user testing?
Maybe.
Well, actually, yes, it is. Now, I've just realized I forgot to take away a name, and I'm probably going to get sued, but never mind. I was working for the biggest social media network in the world. That's what I was supposed to say. And I've realized I've just put it there, but never mind. NDA, Schmendier. And basically what we did is we did it turned into 4 weeks of work, but we did exhaustive testing for Facebook, right? So we were working for them. And I think it's been over 4 years now, so it's okay. But this is user testing, you know, whether you believe it or not. Let me read it to you. Hi, my name is Carl. Thank you for agreeing to participate in this study. I'm with Web Courses Bangkok, and we're conducting research on behalf of Facebook. Today, we'll be looking at the Ads Manager app. And we did. And it was very interesting. Now, they paid us, you know, around about $250,000 to do the test. And we were one of two companies in Bangkok, but they also tested it elsewhere as well. So let's call it an even $2 million. They were looking for one answer, right? They were looking for one thing. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in this presentation. So user testing can be as big as the entire ecosystem, or it can be as niche as one question. And I don't mean, do they like green or blue? That's A-B testing, right? I'm talking about fundamental things of what come to with a system, right? Is this user testing, yes or no? Really? My God. Yes, sir, if you just like to sit down and act naturally. Right? No, luckily that is not, because most cameras, especially the new iMacs, have nearly 8 megabyte cameras, so you don't need to use those. These were only used for eye tracking. And I've got a little thing I'll show you about that in a minute. Is this user testing, yes or no?
No.
You're saying that to annoy me, I know you are. The answer is hell yes! Okay, the reason this is user testing, ladies and gentlemen, is test often, right? Do not wait and then go, da-da! Don't do that. Why? Why? Could be wrong. And if you've gone in the wrong direction, right, you will go very, very, very far. You'll get to the end, and then the client or the project will be in danger. So talk about your ideas. Talk to people about what you're thinking. Talk to people about what you're doing. That is user testing. Is this user testing, yes or no? Yes. Act naturally. I'm not here. That happens all the time. Like, I remember someone testing. I remember I was with a founder, and she was like, oh, can I do the next interview? I'm like, yeah, no worries. And she was like, so how much do you love the app? I'm like, that's a bit of a leading question there, darling. Right? So on a scale of love it or really love it, how do you love it? That's what this is. That's not user testing. You have to be neutral. All right? And if you don't, you'll get rubbish results. Everybody will say that they love it. You know? Do you love it? Yes. Great. Thank you. Investors, can I have more money? Yeah, no. Is this user testing, yes or no? Hell yeah, right? Sit with your colleagues, turn around. Jacob Nielsen said, you can find out 85% of problems with just 5 people, right? And he's kind of the godfather of usability. So ask 5 people and try and choose different people, not your friend who always likes your design. Like, I actually work with someone who hates everything I do, and it's made me better. Is this user testing, yes or no? And I'll tell you what it is. It's the App Store review screen. Is it user testing, yes or no? Yes. If you want to know how to improve an app, go to its review section. Oh my God, it doesn't have Apple login. Ooh, developers. Good. Is this user testing, yes or no? Surveys.
Our survey said.
It should be. How many people do you need to ask? That's a difficult question to answer. There's one tip I'll give to you. Do not do surveys if you know the answer. Right? They're not for confirmation. They're for uncovering stuff that you don't know. So when I ask a question, for example, I don't say, hi, do you like it? Yes or no? Because if you say no, what do I do? If you say yes, what do I do? But if I say, give me 3 ways to improve this, give me 4 things I can remove, that gives you better results and better answers that you can action on, right? The whole point of user testing is action. Chimmy cap? Cap on. All right. Is this user testing, yes or no?
I'm like, no. No.
Well, it kind of is, right? One of the things that you must do with user testing is figure out what you're testing. And again, a reminder, do not ask questions you know the answer to. Ask questions you don't know the answer to, all right? Because otherwise you're wasting resources. So what this is just working out what users need to do. What you physically do, guys, is when you have these tasks, you turn that into a user task kind of spreadsheet or things that you want them to do. So everything that you've built and designed, you will be listed somewhere. Turn that into what you want them to do on the test day. All right. Is this user testing, yes or no? And this is usabilityhub.com, my first tool. Usabilityhub.com, using online tools. Is this user testing, yes or no? Excellent. Good. So you have the 5-second test, which is, pardon my French, shit. Don't do it. It's pointless. Show someone thing for 5 seconds and say, do you like it? It's pointless. But questions, click, preference, and navigation, very good. If you have a bigger project, this is really valuable to get people to where you want them to go. Because just showing preference isn't the real story for something bigger, like a fintech or a telecommunications project. There's a lot to it. Highly recommend usabilityhub.com. All right. Has anybody here worked with big data? Yeah, good. Has anyone ever looked at Google Analytics? Good. So then you've used big data. All right. So big data is not kind of, yes, 4 million records. Yes, we saw what you did all day. But big data is very, very interesting because it gives you highlights of things that you didn't realize. So if you do have the opportunity to work with data, embed it in your project early, right? So when I was working on a fintech project, I wanted to make sure that they had a lot of things in there that I could listen to see if people wanted to do it or not, all right? Is this user testing, yes or no? Is this ideation on a board? Is this user testing? Not really. Right? It's not really. Yeah, it could be a sequence, but this is more to do with UX, not user testing. User testing is part of it, but this is something that you would know that you're designing. User testing is not that. It's user testing, the core of it is to know if you've done the right thing or going to do the right thing or uncover something new. You're not designing. That's not user testing. There he is, Mr. Jacob. All right. So Mr. Nielsen said 85% of problems can be solved by asking just 5 people. I try that with my wife all the time, but it doesn't work. She's always right. All right, so let's see this. Okay, so I've done hundreds of studies over my time, of my career. So I've been a designer about 23 years, 22 years. And I didn't know I was a UX designer until it showed on my invoice from the UN. I didn't even know what it was. All I thought was, I like talking to people to find out what they want and what they don't want, right? I love looking at people when they're using stuff because it's really, really interesting what they do when they're testing. If they start scratching, it means they're thinking and they're unsure of the next step. If they start to breathe differently, it means that they want to say something but they don't want to hurt your feelings. So there's amazing stuff that you can do with testing. Let's have a look at it. So this is an example from my portfolio and my colleague Matthias, right? This is an app, a travel app. Now, their original idea was travel redefined. Sorry, right? It didn't really resonate with anybody, especially not us. And what they were focused on was functionality. They thought, yeah, we can do all of this. We can plan your trip, and we can do this, and we can do that. And they focused on it. You know what we did? We had to make sure, didn't we, right? So we did a survey, and we said, why did you choose this platform? And what did people say? What did they say? Functionality. So what did we do? What did we do? If we were going to improve this design, what did we do? We did test it. Yes, we absolutely did, my friend. And we kind of tested it, but we did also did a survey. We got the information from the survey, right? This is the original design. What did we do? How did we change it? People wanted functionality. So we did what? Made it functional. Jimmy Cobb? All right, because I mean, that's what you do, right? You do a survey, you listen to it, and then you do the complete opposite. Right? Now, why? Now, let me tell you a little story behind this. User testing, the whole point of it is to make your systems better. Chimikab, yes or no? Good, Chimikab. Right, so when we were testing, the people who were using it, which was not many, they loved the functionality. They did not have enough users. They had lots of abandonment. They didn't have anybody really signing up and staying with it. So why would I design something that is the same for what the very small people want? I need to design something new. So we focused on the story. Strap your shoes on, start discovering. We looked at revealing unique experiences and then support your local businesses. That's what we focused on. And there's a reason behind it. And it's this story here from World War II. And what they did is they did a little study of planes that came back, right? So they were going over to Germany, and they came back. And they were like, right, let's do this. Let's look at all of the bullet holes. Yes! And you know what we will do? We shall make it stronger. That's a great idea, right? Come back, look at the bullet holes. Where the bullet holes are, that needs to be stronger. Yes or no? Fantastic. Unfortunately, wrong answer. Because it was the planes that didn't come back that we needed to protect. Jimmy Cab? So, engines, co-pilot, and this dude here. It's just out of interest. I'd love to do that job. Anyway. But you see what I mean? So it was not this data here that was in front of your face that gave you the right answer. It was actually the opposite. Good. Next one. What's that? I can see that you're next to the beer, my friend. Fucking shit. I've got a heckler for a talk. That's amazing. All right. For apps that need to expand into new markets, don't always trust the results from the current users. Right? Test the opposite. Right? Cool. Good. Next story. This is for a big real estate website. I hope I've really hidden this. So this is some testing I did, and I want to show you that quantitative tests are just as good as qualitative, right? Everyone in the room knows what those are. But quantitative tests are very, very interesting in telling, and I'm going to tell you a story about something in a minute, right? And these are the kind of things that you get, right? Look at that. There's a 50% drop-off at just below the line here. All of that content there is pretty pointless. So they could do something a lot more interesting. And I went looking around, and I found some very, very interesting things, actually, from Sweden, some really, really nice websites that moved everything up and kept it nice and clean and at the top. So this is the thing that you can do with the data as well. With analytics, sorry, I do apologize, I just skipped past something. Right? See this here, bounce rate and average session duration. Sorry, can I just tell you a story? When I was teaching once, I was trying to teach my students about bounce rate, right? And I was asking the class, I'm like, okay, so what is a good indicator that there's something wrong with your page that people land on? And they were like, the design. I'm like, no. Is it the navigation? I'm like, no. And I was like, doing this, right? And one girl went, earthquake. I'll never forget that. So bounce rate, what was happening was a lot of their pages had a high bounce rate, like a really, really, really big one. And they had a lot of people reading it, but they were leaving from that same page. So the data told me something. I listened to it. And this is what I did. If you have a low session rate and add more call to actions to the content is part of a series. If you have a lot of people coming to your blog or your branding content, add it as part of a series. That will make people come back for part two, part three, part four, part five. So these little things that you can learn from data, a little number, right? That little number there, right? These two things here set off an entire content strategy for one of the biggest real estate firms in Bangkok. All right, good. Next one. This is one of my favorite stories, FilmDo. And they came to me and they were in a big mess. I said, how many users do you have? They said 6,000. I said, that's great. And I said, how many of those users are paying you money? Two. I guarantee that was her, the founder, and her mom, right? Two active users. And I was just like, how do you do that? How are you surviving, right? But they had a great idea. Imagine this, Netflix, but for independent movies. Right? You're not going to find Rambo 7 on there, right? Okay? You're not going to find, you know, Marvel or whatever. These are really, really good movies. Now, the funny thing was, they were very, very proud of something. And it was this. They were very proud, right? I apologize for the content that's going to come out of my mouth at the moment, but they were very, very proud of being top of Google for lesbian clips. They were very, very proud of it. They were like, yes! People come to us for lesbian clips. And I was like, okay, I understand that. You have some really beautiful movies about you know, relationships and all that kind of stuff. Wonderful idea, wonderful idea. But the problem was the people who were coming for lesbian clips were not looking for what they had. They had a bottle of moisturizer and some toilet roll next to them, and they were all, for some reason, from Turkey. I am not joking. Right? Turkey loves lesbian clips, it seems. And I knew that because of Google Analytics. The bounce rate was 97%. It's like, oh, yes, oh, no. And so I changed it. I said, guys, right? And again, this is user testing, right? I said, stop looking at lesbian clips as your keyword. Stop pushing more content with those words. People want to look for lesbian film. That's a whole different thing. You don't, like, you know, want to do something when you look for lesbian film, all right? And so we did that, and then this happened. We've seen our traffic grow from 5,000 visitors to the end of last year when we had 300,000. Interesting, no? Yeah? Good. All right. So let's look at this one. Let's look at our next tip. Look at the bounce rate through analytics and see if the intent matches the content. Their intent was naughty things, And what they found was a film, therefore, change the intent. So it changed the where you get your traffic from. In this case, we changed the on-page SEO to reflect the real audience. Yes, that is user testing, because it's part of quantitative results. Good. Next one is this. Working with a resort that was 35,000 baht a night. Hello. I'd expect marriage and a shiatsu every day for that. Anyway, that was their website on mobile. Because what they did is the development firm had done this with the browser. And he kept showing, he's like, look, it's perfect. I'm like, have you tested it on a phone? Don't need to, we can do this. Yeah, but you really need to test it on a phone. Nope, we've got this. All right, look at that responsive. Oh! And I showed it on a phone, I was like, all right, tell me what this website's about. And he was like, oh yeah, a fish. There he is. It's about that guy. So what I did was I did some key findings and I showed them what to do. Now it looks like this. It's not absolutely fantastic, but it's a lot, lot better. At least you can see the name, special offers, etc. I didn't design that. I did the UX, but I didn't design the UI. When you see that users are often showing blank screens for even half a second, right? A blank screen, do not like that. Not showing interesting content, then add some sort of loading screen and or easily loaded content like a text, some nice text or something like that. So your user testing is not only about how they use the entire system, but what happens when they land on a page? What do they see in the first second? There's something that developers in the room will know, time to first byte. You really need to optimize that. Okay? Good. Now, here's another story. Worst ever. Oh my God, confusing, complicated. Worst business platform ever. What do you think they're talking about? Any ideas what the platform is? Welcome to Facebook Ads Manager. Yeah, it is, right? Okay, just out of interest, I'm doing some user testing now. How many people think the ads manager on Facebook sucks? Oh, that guy, you were well passionate in that. Fucking yes. <yuff. laughs> Good. I love the hecklers. It's brilliant. I'm so proud. All right. Okay, good. So this is what it kind of looks like now. It's getting a little bit better. Now, like I said, they spent 2 million baht to find out the answer of one question, and I'm going to tell you what that is now. And it was basically, sorry, I'll stay there. Basically, the question is why do people use it? Why do people use Ad Manager? Why do you think, guys? Why do you think they use it? Manage ads. I love that. Brilliant. Yes. On Facebook, right? Yes! Get more business. Good. Why else? Why else would they use Facebook Ad Manager on the phone? Sorry? Nice. And there's the answer. A summary. They were like, yes, we've got the new interactive magic, you know, whizzle wazzle maker, you know. Yeah, that's a technical term. You can Google it. It's hashtag Stack Overflow, whizzle wazzle. Basically, what happened was, that's bright, isn't it? Okay, now. It's like being at the end of a club. Can you leave your drinks at the door, please? Anyway, so basically, what we found out, and they spent all that money to find out, is that people were using the app just to check their ads. They didn't want to build them, make them, change them, anything. They just wanted to check it. So they changed it. And now it became a lot more visual. It's a lot more summary-based. It's a lot easier to use. Right. Now, what I want to talk to you about is this. I want to kind of go through some ideas before we get to questions. How are we doing for time? Time is good? How am I doing for time? 40. I've got at least 407 more jokes to go. So, what type of computer can sing? Adele. Thank you. Oh, boy. Anybody who knows me knows my jokes. All right. Ah, crap. I didn't get time to do this. Right, so this is a quick fire round. I want to give you some quick things just to finish off. All right? Users can't explain what the platform's for. What do you do? Right? This is a big issue. They don't understand what it is. Well, what you do is create a new onboarding process that focuses on how the platform's unique selling point fixes somebody's problem. Right? Sorry to break it to you, but users don't give a shit. They don't care. They don't care who you are, what you, or what you do. It's what you can do for them. And I've been in so many startups that just like, yes, it's gonna disrupt everything. We're gonna disrupt going to the toilet. Right, how are you gonna do that? Well, no, you're not gonna disrupt. Who wants a Bluetooth toilet flusher? Right? Watch this one. Right? I had one guy who was like, I'm gonna disrupt baking. I'm a baking startup. Well, anyway. Next thing you can do, so you, basically what you do is you work out whatever's special about your system and you match it to a pain point and say how you solve it. Good? Next one is do it like a video that explains the day-to-day context. This is another thing that people miss. They miss context because what happens is you're a developer, designer, a PO, whatever, right? You end up being very siloed in what you do because you have to do to make sure you finish the job, all right? So the idea is doing a little video will really, really help. All right? This is literally the best picture I could find. So I apologize. Next one is users don't know how to complete a task. So they're stuck and they're itching and they're looking at you for help and stuff like that. All right? So what you do, and this is actually thanks to Matthias, he helped me with this one, is look back and think about the core purpose. Right? So if it's fintech, it might be about transactions, it might be about saving, whatever it might be. Go back to that original idea, right? And then journey from it. But, and this is something that's very interesting with CX, if anyone is interested in that as well, it's very, very important you look at what happened before and after, not just this stage, right? So for example, a Facebook ad landing on a landing page to then download the app. What did that Facebook ad say and when? Was it Christmas time? Was it a birthday? Was it do this? Was it that? So there's a lot of context you need to think about. All right? So using things like this really, really help. The user seems frustrated. This is a really good one, right? This is from my personal experience. The user seems frustrated when looking at a listing page. This happens a lot. They're like, and they... And they breathe like that, and you know that there's something wrong, right? If you're doing user testing, you have to like listen to the breathing. Never do user testing with me, because I always do this. What you would do is if people start getting frustrated, take shit off the UI. It's as simple as that. And all you have to do is look at the hierarchy of what you've done with your UI. I'm being very specific here as a UI designer. So it's something I do wrong. I have too many different text styles and, you know, sizes and stuff. Keep to three. Keep to two types of call to actions, primary and secondary, right? Because if you don't, it gets messy. And Matthias is often cleaning up my design, and he does the same thing every time. Okay, a bit of spacing and stuff, but he primarily says, all right, we don't need that, we don't need this. This is what you need. And with listing, you have to scan, not read. Good. All right, so do you think this one is better or this one? Left or right is better? Yeah, okay, because you can just go shada-boom, shada-bang, shada-bang, willy-wah, willy-woo, da-ba, gada-boog. All right, again, technical term, look at it on Stack Overflow. Next one is, yeah, they literally do this. They go, all right, and they start scratching their head. Taxi drivers, if they don't know where they're going, if you say something and you say, and then it starts scratching your head, get Google Maps out. Work on the visual hierarchy and the typography and ensure that the primary call to actions mention the destination. Very easy to do, right? So instead of saying click here, you say open new account, right? So call to actions have to say where you're going to go next. They are the connection to go where you're going next. Microcopy helps you achieve that. Let's look at that. Users do not complete the user task core to the system. Often this is due to the assumption that people care. Has anyone here been on a project that you thought was shit? Right? I had one guy, and he's like, my friend. Okay, I do not know what this accent is, but anyway, my friend. We are going to have discount, eh? For you, good price, eh? When you see discount, eh? You take picture, you share. On my platform, everybody know about discount. It's so good. I was like, that's a shit idea. I'm not doing it. And I didn't take the project. I was like, that's what basically people do on Facebook. But mostly, if you find a discount, do you start sharing it everywhere? Woo, I found a discount. No. To solve this, we go back to the basics of the user personas and matching them with real people. Because often founders make up personas to make them happy. It's not the right way. All right, there you go. So, do you need a fresh perspective? Ask me some questions. Oh yeah, that's the end of the presentation, by the way. Cool, thanks. Do we take questions for this one or no? Yes? Questions? You two are awesome, right? You're drinking beers literally at the same time. Did you know that? You literally keep doing this. It's so... NSYNC! NSYNC, now you're talking.
Hello, Carl.
Huh? Who's that? That sounds sexy.
This is me.
Oh, T! What's up, man?
So, what are the key differences to conducting a usability testing in a B2C and a B2B platform?
Wow, good question.
Because most of the presentation is just B2C, right? What are some of the key tips and tricks that you recommend for B2B testing?
Well, your customers become internal. So you're testing internal customers, right? Mm-hmm. So B2B can also be internal within the company, and also it can be B2B within someone in this company and someone in that company. Example, procurement, right? Someone is trying to talk to someone and put in the details of a procurement process for a PO or whatever, right? So the idea is you have to watch. My recommendation is you would do a heuristic evaluation, but also there's a special name for, help me, what's it when you watch people do the work? No, the other one, the fancy one. Observational do. Observation with a French accent, then it's fancy. Observation. So observation, you would do an observation and watch what they do, right? With B2C, you tend to be watching them just do the transactions and things like that. It's the same idea. You're still doing a transaction, but you have to watch them do their job, right? Because your idea, your UX has to help them do better. So that's the only thing I would say is it's more about observation than giving them a test, say, so to speak, I think. It's a hard question, a fucking good one. Excuse my French. Fucking you.
Carl, how many iterations of the testing do you need to do?
Never stops. I do apologize, but yeah, it never stops. What I would say is it's hierarchical. So you need to look at the big wins first and then just move down. But you should always be changing. And you should always try and do your testing during ideation. So you need to test your ideas, right? Don't just kind of go assume it, but literally test it. That's why for this audience, I'd recommend design sprints every day, right? Just design sprint the shit out of things. And really, really go into it and test it, because you might have an idea, but it's not applicable. So I would say you keep testing, you never stop. You never stop. Yes, sir.
So we're trying to be lean, right? We're trying to do more with less.
Yeah.
So are you doing like SUS scoring after testing and those kind of things? Do you find it valuable anymore? Is it relevant?
Can you tell me what SUS scoring is?
At the end, you get an average, and you can show it to clients, but it's not really...
Oh, yeah.
Is it still relevant?
No. The reason... Okay, the one I'm going to say no is because with regards to the results, they tend to be... You tend to look at the mean results, right, rather than specific stories of individual people. So I would say... And this happens with the NPS score. There was a good Medium article. Woohoo! There was a good Medium article about the NPS score that... with those kind of things, you end up looking for the really bad people or the really good people, and you identify them, but you kind of miss the people in the middle. So I think it's a great indicator if it's a passive type of test that you can have in the in your heuristic evaluation and go, well, these were the scores, but we did actually look deeper into a couple of the stories. That's great. So it's part of the story, not the entirety of it. What's up? Yes.
Well, talking about lean, have you ever heard of a book called The Lean Startup?
Of course I
have. Great.
Where
book.
Are you from?
Bradford, England.
Bloody hell. I noticed that accent straight away. Hey.
And you're saying?
I'm from Rochdale originally, but
all right. Nice, nice. Yeah. So anyone who's familiar with a lean startup and who's ever tried to do a startup, you know, knows we can overthink a product and approach it and spend lots and lots of money iterating the first MVP when really, if you go back to the lean startup, you can revert right back to even just a JPEG image to get something out there. So where is the cutoff point to what you would call like an MVP, and like what's the best way to start getting started to, you know, to from like the MVP definition to do we develop it, do we just get people in to test it, the user experience on images, click through prototype, like how is the best in your opinion, which is the best way to approach a startup like that?
There you go. Oh, bloody hell. Let me just reiterate. Let me see if I can understand the question. He's like, when does it become when is it not an MVP, right? When do you move into... So, you know, when do you stop testing and when do you start sort of like going for it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's if you read the Lean Startup, you know, he could have started out with an image, he said, with an input at a certain point in the website, and he could have got the same result after spending like $1 million. So it's like... If I wanted to do a startup, do you start with an MVP, develop the MVP through and then start to do user testing, or do you approach it rather by doing a prototype, like a click-through prototype or something like Envision, or like, you know, because you've been involved in a lot of startups, how, I guess, mixing user testing and...
Just doing it.
And just doing it, like, where do you sort of draw the line and how is the best way to sort of find what your minimum viable product is?
I would say that... do you know what? I'm going to give a strange answer. Because this has happened recently with a project with us, right? Can I say you actually start back at the branding phase? Right, but hear me out, right? With regards to the branding, if you can't figure out what the hell you're doing and why you're doing it, then no matter what you build, you won't know what direction to go in. So if you can, at the branding stage, say, this is my vision, this is my mission, this is my vision, these are my brand ideas and stuff like that. And when that's clear, then start building and stuff. So what I'm trying to say is, if your goal in mind, your mission or vision, right, is not super clear, then you're going to have a problem. So let's say it is. Right? You go, I know exactly what my vision is. I can see this happening. I know exactly what my mission is. This is how I'm going to achieve it, right? You got that. You're sorted. When you start building stuff and start having decisions about design and functionality and you look back at your brand and it's solid, you will go in the right direction anyway. So I would argue that knowing the right direction starts off at the brand rather than it starts off there. Then let's say you start building. I would do... paper prototypes don't work for people who don't understand it. So what I would do is just jump on Figma, by the way, which he didn't mention in his stack. So anyway, purposely didn't ask about the fig. So I would recommend getting on Figma, getting on Sketch, getting on Vision or whatever, and then getting it on a phone and letting people go through it. But give them context, mate. You've got to say, right, imagine you are da-da-da-da-da, go and do this. Right, so you have to give them context. So, for example, you're late for the BTS and you want to know when the next train is, right? And like, okay, give them the phone, but don't say anything. If they get it, that's fine, and then you can start to sort of know. It's a bloody good question, but my answer is actually I would say start at branding, if it's clear. Cool. Any more questions? What are you doing? You're looking guilty. I'm a teacher. I know. I know guilt when I see it. I think it is.
So I got one, Carl. Hello.
Hello, mate.
Hello.
Hello. It was trouble.
With all this COVID happening and everything like that,
yes,
how
darling.
Do you see the industry changing in terms of user testing? Because now, obviously, a lot of things are remote, and you don't get that personal interaction with people, you know, seeing the emotional context of what's going on with them. So how do you feel like that's going to affect the way that we continue to kind of do interview testing and things like that?
I'm going to say, obviously, the product itself has to adapt. These really good questions. The product itself would have to adapt. Second thing is, I'll try and quick fire this. Second thing is we're going to have an opportunity to have more testers because people want to make money remotely. So people will do more testing. I'm going to say that Zoom calls are going to be, you're going to have to still record the screen of them using it. So we'll have to figure out a way of, you need to be able to see people's hands as well if you're using an app, or you need to be able to see them there as well, so you'd have to set that up. I would say because more people will be going online, big data will be a bigger part of this, and qualitative will be harder to do. And yeah, that's all I've got on that one, I think. Do you have an answer in mind that you're thinking of?
I don't have answers, only questions.
Yes.
Will be in context of their own homes, so they'll be comfortable to test on their own phones. They won't be have Carl breathing down the back of their necks.
Yeah.
For,
hello.
So it could be a positive.
Why did you click that?
what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, if the context is you using it at home and it might be a dating app or something like that, absolutely, that's going to be great because they're going to be in the context. If it's something like a travel app or something that involves moving and going out and stuff like that, this anti-COVID sort of thing, that would be a problem. That's just going to be a problem with regards to the practicality of it, I think. Yeah. Cool.
Pizza.
Is that? No. Sorry, mate. Go on.
The difference between business requirement and the data.
Yeah, go on. Give me more context. I know what you're saying. Go on.
So the CEO's like, we need to do this, and then the data's saying the opposite, and you have to try and reconcile between the two, right?
oh, yes, that question. All right. Okay. I would go back to his goals. What is his KPIs? So talk to him about his own data, right? So the data is saying, if we do this, you'll get more conversions, you'll get more retention. Let's talk about retention, right? So your retention rate will be 15% if we do this. What's your KPI for retention? Well, the investors want 17.5. Great, so we're going in the right direction. Next question. So the idea is just show, use his KPIs or use the investor KPIs or whatever you have as an indicator that this is going in the right direction. You could maybe even plot it. But I would say the only way that you can fight that battle is using the same measurements. Because if he's using his opinion, that's not the same as data. Data is not an opinion, it's fact. So you'd have to use a fact with him to match it. What's your KPI? Here's the data. Are they matching? Yes, shut up. Pizza! Hello.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Okay, guys, we're going to get going soon.
Again?
Really? Really? Two peanuts walk into a bar. One was assaulted. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've had one beer, put your hand up. Okay, if you've had two beers, put your hand up. If you've had three beers, put your hands up. If you've had four beers, put two hands up and one leg. All right, good. I'd just like to say thank you so much. I didn't realize that if you're a speaker, you get your own pizza. Right? But every time I was eating it, they kept laughing, so I'm not sure what was on it. All right, guys, thank you so much. This is the last talk of the evening. The jokes get worse, as you can probably tell. But this is a kind of a subject that's really, really close to my heart. It's something that really matters. And the great thing about it is, it's really easy to do. All right, guys, so as you may know, a lot of people know in this room where I come from, what I did 12 years ago is I set up a school. right? On the 8th of October, we'll be celebrating our 12-year anniversary. For any business to survive 12 years in Bangkok is doing pretty good. So one of the reasons that Web Courses survived as a school, as a tech school, is because we really, really love what we're doing. I love teaching. You can probably tell from how I do this. So this is the kind of thing that I want to bring to you with this talk, because it's very, very important to me. And it became extremely personal recently, right? 2 weeks ago, I could not see. That's what I used to see. 2 weeks from today. I now see this. This is my son. He's called Brian. Told you. But this is Brian with a Z. All right? So this is what I used to see. It was, everything was too bright. If I was in the living room, I couldn't see. I was totally, I was had a 30% vision, and that's what he looked like. And then when I had my eye surgery, I could see him. All right? And I was, yay, thank you. And he was just like, "Why, Dad, why are you crying?" And I was like, "I can see you." He's like, "Oh, you're crying because you can see me?" I was like, "You actually look like me. I was scared for a moment." Anyway, so the idea is like this became very, very personal, and to my job, it became very hard because this is what I would see if I was using Figma, and I use a lot of Figma, right? They don't have a dark. Whoa, what's up the fig? What's up the fig? Right? The problem with Figma is it didn't have a dark mode, right? Now I'm a designer. I've been part of accessibility for a long years. I was an accessibility champion for the UN for a few years while I was here. I love accessibility. I don't have any reason to do it until I started. I had eye problems, and it was amazing that it's going really well. There's a lot of good stuff happening for people with, and I used to call it additional cognitive requirements. And accessibility, guess what? It's bloody easy to do. So when I was brought in as a UX lead, as a consultant for a fintech, one of the things I said is like, look, guys, I feel really passionate about accessibility. It's something that you can affect many people's lives and just make stuff easier. And it's not hard. Now, in the old days, I sold it very easily because there is one big person in the world that's blind. Does anybody know who that is? That every business wants to impress. What blind person does every business want to impress? And I say person. Who do you think it is? Google. Google, good. I was hoping someone would say Ray Charles, but never mind. It's Google. Google's blind. So you have to explain what you build to Google. Chemikap? Yeah? Chaikap. So that means accessibility is important for businesses, even if you don't have quote-unquote accessibility issues with your persons. So I was hoping for things like dark mode. So there is work to do. I'm here to tell you good news. I have seen countless talks about this. It's like, oh yes, you've got to do this. Well, it's actually quite easy. And I'm going to show you how to do it. Right. This all kicked off recently. There's been a few things that obviously kicked off accessibility, right? Accessibility is making sure that everyone can use your app. That's it. It's not doing anything special. It's not new code or anything like that. I would argue that if you're a hiring manager, right, if you're a senior manager and you're hiring someone, the stuff that I'm going to talk about, if your designers are not doing it, don't hire them. Because they're not good enough. It's very easy. So what happened was Domino's in 2019, October, right? Yeah, October 2019, Domino's got sued because someone couldn't order a pizza. It's fair enough, right? Imagine that, all the pizza you've just enjoyed today. Imagine not being able to enjoy it because you're blind, right? You'd be like, hey, hold on. Make it accessible for me. So Domino's got sued. And then everybody, like me with consultants, got lots of new money. Because everyone was like, oh, we need to make everything accessible. No problem, my friend. You pay me, it feels good, eh? No problem, I'll do you a good deal, eh? All right. I go sort of like East European when I talk to my clients. I find it gives me a better price. Now, accessibility is everywhere. Accessibility Design Awards, right? There was a. I've got a friend in the audience here who loves a game. And he's very, very, very good at it. And it's called Gears of War. Gears of War 2019 won the Accessibility Award. So computer games can do it, right? So we can do it. Question is how. I want to show you this little video. Hi, 3 seconds before, sorry. So I've got this video I want to show you. I will cry, so just warning you. What's a pirate's favorite letter?
You'd be thinking it's the R, but it'd be the C.
People think that having a disability is a barrier. But that's not the way I see it. You can catch up with friends.
Ready?
You can capture a moment with your family.
One face, small face, focus lock.
And you can start the day bright and early. You can take a trip to somewhere new. Can concentrate on every word of a story.
A bird began to sing. Jack opened his eyes.
You can take the long way home. Or edit a film like this one. When technology is designed for everyone, it lets anyone do what they love, including me.
Hey, that always makes me
smile. Face.
Right. So that's just one story. That was amazing. She edited that by herself. Now, she used something called binary input, and that's actually part of your phone, part of the setting. So like I said, there's a lot of things that people you can do. So for example, I took big advantage of when I couldn't see like this, dark mode is what I could use because with my eyes I couldn't see anything bright. It was everything was 30% bright. That's how I used to see. Luckily, my co-founder who I work with, he was very, very patient with me, but my text messages were horrible. It was just like, yes, I'll meet you in the bum later. You're like, what? and it was just really, really horrible text. And it was because I couldn't see it. But then I found there's some tools that are part of the phone that help us help people with additional cognitive requirements. So let's move past this one. Please don't play. Good. So let's have a look at this. Accessibility and usability. All right. Skip a little bit past that. Now, on your phone, you have this, right? If you go to general, if you go to accessibility, right? And then you've got voiceover and you can turn it on. I'm not going to ask you to do it now. I might ask you to do it later because it's absolutely hilarious when people don't know how to turn it off. Voiceover, message from mother. You forgot your underwear. All this is absolutely hilarious when you've got like 50 people doing that. But it's very, very interesting. And I saw this in action just recently. My friend Mattis and I were consulting a place called KX Knowledge Center. There's a coffee shop in there. Everybody who works in the coffee shop's blind. Awesome service, seriously. And just the way they do it, like they have a phone with a camera on it. They show the note to the phone and it says 100 baht, right? I kept trying to convince him it was 1,000 baht, but you know, I kept trying to do the voiceover, 1,000 baht, 1,000 baht, but it didn't work. Some people said I'm going to go to hell for trying to, you know, con a blind person, but I say money, money, money. So the that's recorded, right? Oops. So the idea is this is all stuff that is in there, right? For me, dark mode and large text solved a lot of my issues, right? And there's a lot of things that you can do. You've got things like invert colors. And there's a lot of inputs that you can do. So what she was doing is she was doing it's called a binary input, and she was just hitting a thing here that says on or off, right? So there's a lot of stuff that you can do, and it's not very hard to do. Power of the web is in its universality, accessed by everyone regardless of disability, and is essential aspect by Mr. Tim Berners-Lee from England. Whoop, whoop. Right? So Tim Berners-Lee, inventor of the internet, kind of, he said this, and this is why it's so important, guys. And I want to show you a couple of things. So there's three accessibility guides. So what you're doing with this one is just making sure a couple of very simple ideas with accessibility. It's not hard, right? All of you who are designers can do it today, now. It's not hard. It's not something you suddenly have to go, I've got a whole new stack I've got to learn. Nah, it's easy. And one of the first things that you want to do is just having a look at the size of the text, right? So you've got this one to this one. Using things like REM, REM or EM for when you're doing the CSS text sizes and things like that solves a lot of problems, right? Do you recommend REM, not EM? But things like this really, really help people with you know, bad sites like ours. this article here, I'll make all of these presentations available. Just animations help you, notice things as well. So put animations, they help us. I say us, I used to be like, I couldn't see anything. So yeah, they really, really help. Another thing is, have you ever used an app when you have to get your little finger to, like, right? If you've ever submitted a 90-day report for your visa, right? You just, And then you start getting cotton buds and you're like, it's not a finger. That's not going to work, is it? Right? So you start kind of chewing your finger off so you can touch it. That's not cool. We call these target areas. Now, sorry, quick show of hands. Who uses Figma? Right, you know what a frame is, right? That's a lot of people. Right? Come on, Seven Peaks, get it sorted. Yeah. Yeah? Got it. Right. Sketch till I die. Anyway, you know what a frame is, right? Imagine that as your frame, center-aligned, vertical, horizontal icon. Icon can be 16 pixels. The target area has to be 24. Bang, your accessibility according to iOS, and it's 28 according to Android. So slight difference, but still. So the idea is, this is your target area. So that's the size of the icon, but this here is what you can push. So for developers, please look at this kind of thing. Next one is color and contrast. A really, really easy plugin to do, right? Is just to check if you can see things together, right? Grays, be careful of using too much gray. But there's some really, really good plugins for Figma that all you do is select two colors, hold down shift or whatever, right? Or control, select the two colors, click the Figma plugin, bang, it says yes or no. Does anyone know what AAA and AAA is? Yeah? Okay, should you go for AAA, yes or no? No. You'll have a really hard life and your design will look shit. Right? AAA is just like, oh! You're like, oh, nah. So just go for AA, it's totally fine, right? Unless you're like a very specific government organization in England, you don't need to do it. So color and contrast, very, very easy. Right, 14 points and above, please do that. I have an argument with Matthias all the time. He loves little, Swedish little small text, bollock rubbish. And I'm just like, can I read it, please? He says, no, it doesn't look nice. I'm like, but I need to read it. He says, no, but it looks nice. So you'll have these arguments. I'm joking. He never does anything nice. Anyway, so when he does like 14 pixels, I would recommend 16, but it doesn't work. Sometimes the UI, you have too much fighting for the eye. So I totally understand what you're saying. But please, God, do not go below 14 points. If you do, I will find you and I will kill you. 22-point line height and 80 CPL. Do you know what CPL is? It's three letters of the alphabet. Come on. No. CPL, characters per line, right? So don't kind of like get people to read like this, okay? All the way there, okay? It's very, very difficult. in my design boot camp, I get my students, one student to hold a pen. Did I do that with you? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. You probably just don't remember. I have normally crap students, by the way. So what we do is one student will hold a pen, and the other student has to touch it, right? Then you move it, and when you kind of move it like this, it's very, very difficult, especially if you start here and then try and touch it. It's harder, but it's a lot easier to touch like that. And that's what happens with the character per line. If you have more than 80 characters per line, it's harder to read, because the eye has to go all the way back to the first character. If it's like, oh, and then you know, go, okay, ah, dink, it's hard. Be kind to your eyes. There's four different types of color blindness, right? And so, yeah, these are actually two. This is the original color, and this is the color with someone with duo something, color blindness. So just one little rule. Don't use color to display meaning. If something is A and B, and you use red for A's and B for that one, that's a problem. There has to be an A or a B or a 1 or a 2. Something like that. Trello. Does anyone know Trello? Yeah? Nice. They use patterns. Yeah? Do that. So if you're saying like, oh, you know, like call to actions is fine, but call to actions have words in a button, right? Well, then don't always say like red and green with the same words, because to someone who has duo, you know, I think it's duo tone or something. Was it? Duton, right? They can't see the difference. They look the same color. So you're going to get problems. So just all you have to do is change the words. Use the words to convey the meaning, not the color. So again, this is actually from a design system. Does anybody here use design systems? Fantastic. So now, this one, not good. Do not do, eh? Not good, eh? This one, not good, eh? Ah, it's good, eh? This one is good, eh? All right? So try and just make it clear. I know you want it to look cool. Look, I get you. You want it to, oh, it's nice and gray. Look at that shadow. Oh, No. Right? You going, oh, yes, yes, well done. That gray shadow's flipping awesome. And some guy going, look, I need to book a flight, you knobhead. I can't do it. So just keep it nice and thing. There's a ratio. I think it's like 4 to 1. This is the, it's called the color contrast tool in Figma. Whoop, whoop. Right? So it's Figma. And basically what you do is you select a frame and it tells you yay or nay. And if it's nay, you change it. And if it's yay, you go, woo. Easy. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, what is this? Delete. What? Delete. Keep going. Back, cancel, close, I like it, good, yeah. What else? Treasure, nice, I like treasure. That was because of the pirate joke. Oh. Okay, so it could be many things, right? Going to give you a very, very easy tip, dear designers and dear developers. When you're naming your layers, right, what's that? You can. That's very good. Well done, kids. Well done. Camera. Donkey. Yes, well done. Right, it's a comp, right? It's camera. Right. Okay, what else could it be? Capture, did you say? Very good. Capture, very good. Screenshot. Picture. I like that, yeah. Snapshot. Yes. Yeah. No, dude, that he's thinking out of the box, that is. Give that man a raise. All right. Okay, so for example, it could be select screenshot. It could be take a picture. It could be whatever you want, right? So the idea is you've got a lot of choice. This is just one screen of one part of Font Awesome, which you probably all know, right? And there's a lot of stuff in here. Is arrow up. Arrow up what? Because if you're blind, your user interface is spoken to you. So if it says, and if you use an app, I don't know if anyone knows this, what you do is you slide this way or this way to go through the UI. So as you do this, it goes and it says what it is. If it said arrow up, you'd be like, arrow up what? Close what? Photo what? Why has he turned me off? Am I boring everyone? He's turned me off. Yeah? Thanks for that. Brilliant. Wait, I told you, at least buy me a drink first. All right, good. So, the idea is, it's very, very simple. When you are naming your layers, the stuff that you have to export, right? Just name it by the action, not what it is. Close window, close dialogue, right? Take screenshot. If I say camera, you'd be like, right, okay, he's weird, right? But if I say take screenshot, upload, or something like that, it's more useful. All I'm saying is just use that rule, name your layers by what they do, not what they are. Easy. All right, so avoid SVG 12, cross, icon. Good, it's close, but close notification is even better. Good. All right. So again, design systems, all right? Some people love them, some people hate them. And those people who hate them are stupid. So this is really cute. This is actually a true story, right? And we so we were talking to a senior UI, bless her, right? She might be watching. And we were like, what is that? And she's like, it's a kebab menu. I was like, what? And I was like, what is it? She's like, it's the menu. I'm like, okay. How about this? It's payments menu. Doesn't matter what that is, because a blind person doesn't give a flying beep. They want to know what they can do with it, all right? Speech bubble, icon red. Now, that everyone's guilty of that, including me. Good chat, great is chat active. Okay, you've got filled and non-filled and stuff like that. Name your layers by the actions. Use contrast tool and keep text size to over 16 pixels. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wanted to take a picture of any of the slides, that is the one. That is a t-shirt for the day. All right, and to quote a friend of mine, hashtag today's tea. This is very, very cool. All right. Do you like the color? No, yeah, I'm glad you said that. He chose it. Just mentioning that. All right. Okay, so the idea is, you get stuff on this. Now, does that screen look okay? How does it look? No one trusts me now. I like that. That's good. Everyone's like, no, I'm not saying anything. Do you think that's good? Is it good screens? Yeah. Do you mind? No, good. Okay, so yes. Do you think it's a yes? Too many different colors. Ricky's like, too many different colors. All right. Every single part of that design is wrong. Nearly every. The only thing is, and that's because it's a picture, is probably those. They're big enough and enough contrast. But the rest of it is shit. Look, what is that? What is that? Yes, I love using your app with a magnifying glass. Right? Everything's on there. How do I know it's wrong? Because Mattis and I broke it on purpose to teach it. All right, so one of the things that we do is training teams to use design systems, to create design systems, and not do shit like this. All right, so the idea is you can start to go in and start making things bigger, and it starts to look a lot better. Just looks a lot clearer. Look at that. Looks so much better now. Now the text is big enough. Good. Let's get fixing. Yep. So that's the idea of that one. And what I want you to do is, when you're thinking of accessibility, right, is not be afraid of it. All you need to do, honestly, right, is those three things. Text size, over 16 pixels. Contrast, and name your layers. That's it. Because all of those things go into production. And when they go into production, they help other people. And that goes back to that girl. All right? Cool. All right, guys. That's it. Thank you. Right, questions, but please ask nice, easy ones. Yes?
I'm a developer. So
it's not your fault, mate. It's not your fault. This cream.
Apart from the Figma,
Chaika.
Any tools that you'd like to suggest for
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Right. There is something called JAWS. Do you do app or SaaS or what, web, app or what are you doing? You do perfect, then JAWS. So get JAWS.
We are hiring.
They're hiring, if you didn't know, right? So the idea, I would recommend using JAWS. JAWS is a screen reading software, right? And use that one. Install it. Go through your app, and that's one great way of doing it. You can upload. There is something called Wave. Type in Wave Accessibility Test. That's a really good one. And JAWS has an online version as well for doing accessibility tests. Bang! That was a good answer. Next question is going to be hard. What? I'm scared. How many beers have you had? Before I answer your question, how many beers? Too many. He's going to sing Country Road in a minute. Yeah.
Hello?
Oh, better. Okay.
Hello?
I'm just wondering why iOS hate accessibility, to be honest with you, because
okay. If
you think about Apple's default kit for their iOS,
you
have Caption 1, Caption 2, which are 12 pixels and 11 pixels.
Yes.
You have Footnote, which is 13 pixels.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just wondering how you would approach that when you talk to anyone or any kind of like developer when you say, hey, we don't want to use this because you literally can't see it. But because of iOS, this is the standard defaults that we have.
Yes. It's a very good question. It's an easy answer, thank God. So there's something called adaptive text, I think you can do with the iOS building system or something like that. But it responds to the accessibility input of the device. So you just have to do adaptive text, like using REM for CSS and things like that. So as long as it's you can still do the crappy small version. I'm going to point at Matthias for that. It's his fault. You can still do that. But if they do turn up the size like I had to do, it actually turns it up. For example, Line didn't. WhatsApp did. So I kept moving all my contacts to WhatsApp. Because when I was like, no. You know what I mean? So I would recommend, the only thing is, go with their guidelines for the standard look and feel because it's easier and a lot of kits are based on that. But when you code it, allow the text to change, please. Please, guys.
Thank you.
Cool.
Hello again.
Oh, no.
Sure, it's going to be short. It's going to be short.
I'm still scarred from that last question.
All right, so my first start was back in 2011, and me and my partner were very new to IT. We came in and we did a design of this app.
Yeah.
And when we came back into 2014, we had a complete redesign of the application, but the UX was actually quite similar.
Right.
But the UI was like, if I've ever wanted to shoot myself in the face, it was when I went back to see my design in the beginning.
Yeah.
Or my friend's design in the beginning, should I say. So in startups, I hear a lot, design doesn't matter. You can start with anything as long as the functionality is there and it works. Now, personally, I'm in the opinion of that since 2011, the standards have been raised quite a lot by companies and this and this and that and that. So it's for anyone who's having a startup out there, how exactly important is UI in contrast to UX when you have your first
product? You promised
product?
Me an easy question, motherfucker. My God. All right.
Basically, can it look like shit and still launch an app?
I'm gonna say no. You can't. Not now, because unless it's a new market, would you reckon? Yeah, and if it's a new market, then maybe it can look like it's been thrown together. But if it's in something that's a very established market, travel, tourism, health, fintech, whatever it might be, you are competing with big players now. And even I now, like, I used to be able to throw a website together, but now I'm like, no, I can't do that, because otherwise there's so many other people doing it. Now, there's one exception to all of this, and they've purposely kept their system like this, Craigslist. Craigslist looks like shit on purpose. because they've tested changing it and updating it, and they lost lots of users. So it depends on your heritage, I would say. But I would definitely say that with so many tools out there for UI kits, there's no excuse for shit design.
Thank you.
I hope. That's good. Yeah. Now he's saying, well, Carl, you've got shit design, so... Yeah. Next question. Oh, no.
Carl, I'd just like to thank you very much for a very wonderful presentation tonight. It was really very informative, and it's great to see you. You know, it's been 1 year since I was in the boot camp with you.
Yes.
And I can't believe that so much time has gone by. And, you know, for me, this is one of my first events after COVID. Probably for many of us here, this is our first time that we've been out after the COVID pandemic. So yeah. I'd like to thank Seven Peaks for arranging this tonight.
Big round of applause for Seven Peaks.
Thanks for bringing us back out again. Okay, yes. And Carl, it's great to come out and see you speak again. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Oh,
any questions?
Let me help you a bit.
Vale.
Okay.
Check it.
There is a tool or some mystical art spell, whatever you know, that into the any software for design, whatever, I don't need a resolution of 3,065 pixels per another 5,000. Don't speak you, because you have workflow, the box, and the tiny text.
Mm.
So there is a sort of mystical tool that I select all resize to be more accessible. Why? Because they have to do in that way, okay. But when you read, is you need to zoom to read the text. Okay, I need to add my note. Zoom again. Go here. Okay, maybe I'm right. Let me check. Oops, I'm wrong. I need to go back to cancel my notes.
Yeah.
Is here? No. Is here? No. So, like that, also for the user that use this kind of software.
Yeah, magnification mode is on Windows and iOS.
Yes, I know. It's from Windows 95.
Chai. Sorry, what was the question? What was the question?
You reply now.
I'm going to find out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Go ahead. Give an answer to that.
Right. Have you noticed the kind of questions that come back from the people at the back near the beer? Right? As you come down here, the quality of questions get a lot better. Is it? All right. Yeah. All right, guys. Any more questions? No? Okay. Guys, thank you so much. Oh, no, we've got one more. Go on.
Actually, I have a question on this one because this accessibility thing is not really a thing in Thailand.
That's a lie. That's not true.
Maybe, yeah.
It's getting better.
The question is, how can I justify, the reason to do this? Because as a developer, this kind of taking some time as well. When I have to explain to customer what's the value they're going to get from this one, could you just elaborate
right.
on that one?
It's a very, very easy answer. There is no investment needed. Is there an investment needed to name a layer correctly? No. Is there an investment needed to remember to use 14 or up? No. Is there an investment needed to know not to put gray on gray? I would argue no. So for me, I would say it's part of your hiring process that when you are hiring, because Seven Peaks is hiring, if you didn't get it, when you're hiring, you should look at their layers. When my students go through our boot camp, when they want to get certified, I look at their layers. They're required to send me their files. And that's what I would argue is those three things, my friend, are not any extra work. Testing it, yes, right? But if you know you've named it close notification instead of close or icon 37, you've honestly, half the battle is done because there's so many great tools out for people who need a little bit of help with something, all right? So it's not that hard, my friend. It's a great question. Thank you.
One more question.
All right, one more.
I don't have a question, but just on top of this, so we've had projects before where we've had a client where the team in particular has actually mentioned to us we have colorblind staff.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't even say it's down to the companies in Thailand. I would say it's the awareness of the teams and the research that they do inside the companies, where they're aware that other people on the teams need, you know, accessibility. So in Thailand, it's not even you need to make the companies aware, it's you need to make the individual staff and individual teams aware that we need this or that maybe we need to account for this.
Awesome. Thanks, mate. Can I just tell you a little story? So when I was in the UN, I was consulting for the UN in Manila, and there was something called inclusive business, and I learned three amazing things with that. So first thing I learned was there's blind architects. I shit you not, right? There is architects that are blind. So this guy was an architect, and we were told to do a presentation. He was like, right, you're funny and loud. You do the talking. I'll do the PowerPoint. This guy just went on PowerPoint and just used it so well, so quick, right? So when we say disability, that's bullshit. It's just a different ability. So he was able to use that so, so well. Second thing I learned, has anybody here got AIS? Phone call, right? Have you ever phoned the call center? You were talking to a blind person in Chiang Mai. Their main call center is in Chiang Mai and they do pair things. So what? There's a deaf person who is doing the looking at the screen, and then the blind person listening to doing the call. And they work together to give you a good customer service. Didn't know that. Third thing is, I met the Minister of Accessibility or Disabled People, whatever, I can't remember his exact title. He was blind himself. And he told me something that's very, very interesting. If you have 60% of registered disabled staff on your company, you don't pay any tax. Look it up in Thailand, right? So if you are able-bodied, be careful your boss trying to break your legs for no reason, right? It's for the tax, shut up. All right, guys, that's enough from me. Thank you so much. Khap ong khao.
So I guess the last thing to do is thank you and actually ask you why you hate Sketch so much.
I don't hate Sketch. I just never learned it. I just love Figma.
So we have a little gift here for Carl, basically for kicking off the first of our design
Thank
talks.
You.
We really appreciate it. So we get one more round of applause, please, for Carl. Yeah.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Enjoy our future events and follow us on our channels.